Amalakin Zabandam Ganukari Asu.
Same 25.
42. As Hero crests the pass on his motorcycle at 5 in the morning, the town of Port Sherman, Oregon, is suddenly laid out before him, a flash of yellow low glow wrapped into a vast U-shaped valley that was ground out of the rock a long time ago by a big tongue of ice in an epical period of geological cunnilingus. There is just a light dusting of gold around the edges, where it fades into the rainforest, thickening and intensifying as it approaches the harbor. A long, narrow, fjord-like notch cut into the straight coastline of Oregon, a deep, cold trench of black water heading straight out to Japan. Hero's back on the rim again. Feels good after that night ride through the sticks. Too many rednecks. Too many Mounties. Even from 10 miles away and a mile above, it's not a pretty sight. Farther away from the Central Harbor District, Hero can make out a few speckles of red, which is a little better than the yellow. He wishes he could see something in green or blue or purple, but there don't seem to be any neighborhoods done up in those gourmet colors. But then, this isn't exactly a gourmet job. He rides half a mile off the road, sits down on a flat rock in an open space, ambush-proof, more or less, and goggles into the metaverse.
Librarian?
Yes, sir.
Inanna.
A figure from Sumerian mythology. Later cultures knew her as Ishtar or Esther.
Good goddess or bad goddess?
Good. A beloved goddess.
Did she have any dealings with Enki or Asherah?
Mostly with Enki. She and Enki were on good and bad terms at different times. Inanna was known as the queen of all the great May.
I thought the May belonged to Enki.
They did, but Inanna went to the Abzu, the watery fortress in the city of Eridu, where Enki stored up the May, and got Enki to give her all the May. This is how the May were released into civilization.
Watery fortress, huh?
Yes, sir.
How did Enki feel about this?
He gave them to her willingly, apparently because he was drunk and besotted with Inanna's physical charms. When he sobered up, he tried to chase her down and get them back, but she outsmarted him.
Let's get semiotic, Hero mumbles. The raft is Elbob Reif's watery fortress. That's where he stores up all of his stuff, all of his May. Juanita went to Astoria, which was as close as you can get to the raft a couple of days ago. I think she's trying to pull an Inanna.
In another popular Sumerian myth, the librarian says, Inanna descends into the netherworld.
Go on, Hero says.
She gathers together all of her May and enters the land of no return.
Great.
She passes through the netherworld and reaches the temple that is ruled over by Ereshkigal, goddess of death. She is traveling under false pretenses, which are easily penetrated by the all-seeing Ereshkigal. But Ereshkigal allows her to enter the temple. As Inanna enters, her robes and jewels and May are stripped from her, and she is brought stark naked before Ereshkigal and the 7 judges of the underworld. The judges, quote, fasten their eyes upon her, the eyes of death. At their word, the word which tortures the spirit, Inanna was turned into a corpse, a piece of rotting meat, and was hung from a hook on the wall. End quote. Kramer.
Wonderful. Why the hell would she do something like that?
As Diana Wolkstein puts it, quote, Inanna gave up all she had accomplished in life until she was stripped naked with nothing remaining but her will to be reborn. Because of her journey to the underworld, she took on the powers and mysteries of death and rebirth. End quote.
Oh. So I guess there's more to the story.
Inanna's messenger waits for 3 days, and when she fails to return from the netherworld, goes to the gods asking for their help. None of the gods is willing to help, except for Enki.
So our buddy Enki, the hacker god, has to bail her ass out of hell.
Enki creates
two people and sends them into the netherworld to rescue Inanna. Through their magic, Inanna is brought back to life. She returns from the netherworld, followed by a host of the dead.
Juanita went to the raft 3 days ago, Hero says. It's time to get hacking.
Earth is still where he left it, zoomed in to show a magnified view of the raft. In the light of last night's chat with Chuck Wrightson, it's not hard to find the hunk of raft that was staked out by the Orthos when the Enterprise swung by truck a few weeks back. There's a couple of big-ass Soviet freighters tied together, a swarm of small boats around them. Most of the raft is dead brown and organic. But this section is all white fiberglass, pleasure craft looted from the comfortable retirees of Trock. Thousands of them. Now the raft is off Port Sherman, so Hero figures that's where the High Priests of Asherah are hanging out. In a few days, they'll be in Eureka, then San Francisco, then L.A., a floating land link tying the Ortho's operations on the raft to the closest available point on the mainland. He turns away from the raft, skims across the ocean to Port Sherman to do a bit of reconnoitering there. Down along the waterfront, there's a nice crescent of cheap motels with yellow logos. Hero rifles through them, looking for Russian names. That's easy. There's a Spectrum 2000 right in the middle of the waterfront. As the name implies, each one has a whole range of rooms, from human coin lockers in the lobby all the way to luxury suites on the top. And a whole range of rooms has been rented out by a bunch of people with names ending in Off and Ovsky and other dead Slavic giveaways. The foot soldiers sleep in the lobby, laid out straight and narrow in coin lockers next to their AK-47s, and the priests and generals live in nice rooms higher up. Hero pauses to wonder what a Pentecostal Russian Orthodox priest does with a magic fingers. The suite on the very top is being rented out by a gentleman by the name of Gurov. Mr. KGB himself. Too much of a wimp to hang out on the actual raft, apparently. How'd he get from the raft to Port Sherman? If it involves crossing a couple of 100 miles of North Pacific, it must be a decent-sized vessel. There are a half a dozen marinas in Port Sherman. At the moment, most of them are clogged with small brown boats. It looks like a post-typhoon situation, where a few 100 square miles of ocean have been swept clean of sampans that have piled up against the nearest hard place. Except, this is slightly more organized than that. The refuse are coming ashore already. If they're smart and aggressive, they probably know that they can walk to California from here. That explains why the piers are clogged with trashy little boats. But one of them still looks like a private marina. It's got a dozen or so clean white vessels lined up neatly in their slips, no riffraff. And the resolution of this image is good enough that Hero can see the pier speckled with little donuts, probably rings of sandbags. That'd be the only way to keep your private moorage private when the raft was hovering offshore. The numbers, flags, and other identifying goodies are harder to make out. The satellite has a hard time picking that stuff out. Hero checks to see whether CIC has a stringer in Port Sherman. They have to because the raft is here, and CIC hopes to make a big business out of selling raft intelligence to all the anxious waterfronters between Skagway and Tierra del Fuego. Indeed, there are a few people hanging out in this town, uploading the latest Port Sherman intel. And one of them is just a punter with a video camera who goes around shooting pictures of everything. Hero reviews this stuff and fast forward. A lot of it is shot from the Stringer's hotel window. Hours and hours of coverage of the stream of shitty little brown boats laboring their way up the harbor, tying up to the edge of the mini-raft that's forming in front of Port Sherman. But it's semi-organized in that some apparently self-appointed water cops are buzzing around in a speedboat, aiming guns at people, shouting through a megaphone. And that explains why, no matter how tangled the mess in the harbor becomes, there's always a clear lane down the middle of the fjord, headed out to sea. And the terminus of that clear lane is the nice pier with the big boats. There are two big vessels there. One is a large fishing boat flying a flag bearing the emblem of the Orthos, which is just a cross and a flame. It is obvious Trock loot. The name on the stern is Kodiak Queen, and the Orthos haven't bothered to change it yet. The other large boat is a small cruise vessel made to carry rich people comfortably to nice places. It has a green flag and appears to be connected with Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong. Hero does a little more poking around in the streets of Port Sherman and finds out that there is a pretty good-sized Mr. Lee's Greater Hong Kong franchise here. In typical Hong Kong style, it is more of a spray of small buildings and rooms all over town. But it's a dense spray. Dense enough that Hong Kong has several full-time employees here, including a pro-consul. Hero pulls up the guy's picture so he'll recognize him. A crusty-looking Chinese-American gent in his 50s. So it's not an automated, unmanned franchise like you normally see in the lower 48.